On entering the house, the three wise men saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. Now, after they had left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you. For Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." And Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night, and went to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I have called my son." When Herod saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, he was infuriated, and he sent and killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had learned from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what had been spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. "A voice was heard in Ramah, wailing and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they were no more." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Well, it's not New Year's yet. This is the fifth day of Christmas. And you are forgiven if you forgot your golden rings. There's been a lot going on. Last Tuesday night, the midnight air was full of candlelight and joyful noise. The angels danced for Christ is born, and since then, some of the visitors have come and gone, the wise men among them. For some of us, a distance away, the question remains: where was Christ born? Now, you may think that's a silly question, already answered. Where was he born? In Bethlehem of Judea. Okay, fine. But where? The children who were among us last week could not agree on the specific location. Some said Jesus was born in a cave. They must have been reading the ancient theologian Justin Martyr, who said about 150 AD that Jesus was born in a cave. Not that he was there to see it, but that's what he passed on. Others said, no, Jesus was born in a barn, for he was placed in a feed trough, and that's where the cattle was. Everybody knows you keep the cattle in the barn, right? Well, no. Not if you're a first century Palestinian. Then you bring the cattle inside your home to keep them warm, and that's where the mangers were. Where was he born? The wise men believed the new king of the Jews must be born in a palace, and that's where they went, in the capital city of Jerusalem. Where's the brand new king? And wow, was the current king ever surprised? He had to ask the Bible scholars on the royal staff, "Where is the Messiah to be born?" And they thumbed through the scrolls of Micah the prophet and said, "Bethlehem of Judea." The king didn't know that, because most kings don't spend a lot of time reading the Old Testament prophets. And it turns out the wise men were about 6 miles off. Today, all the tourists visit Bethlehem, provided they can get through the checkpoints. They go to the Church of the Nativity, located where else but Manger Square. Founded by Emperor Constantine's mother in 325 AD, that big old church took 240 years to complete. I don't know if you've been there, but it's a venerable old place, having survived earthquakes, the Crusades, and countless tourists. And if you go, you stand in a long line that moves slowly. If you talk, a cranky priest snarls, "Be quiet, this is holy ground." You wind down a long staircase, and then suddenly there it is, a 14-point silver star surrounded by marble. According to Constantine's mother in 325 AD, that's the spot. Although I don't think it looked like that at the time, it's not very humble. Was Christ born there? If you ask the same question of the scholars, they look down at their sandals and shuffle a little bit. Like Father Raymond Brown, great Bible scholar. He reminds us the Bible's Christmas stories were written 50, 60, 80 years after Jesus' birth. And all the scholars say, we know he came out of Nazareth, but that town is 90 miles to the north. And there's no historical record of Caesar's census, nor much evidence that the Holy Family spent a lot of time in Bethlehem, so who knows? All we have are the Bible stories. Yet here's one thing we can say with absolute certainty. Jesus was born into a world where a lot of children are still in danger. Now, we didn't tell you that on Christmas Eve. No. That was the night to sing, "Away in the manger, no crib for a bed, the little Lord Jesus laid down his sweet head." That was the night to light candles and sing "Silent Night, Holy Night." And that was it. But today, after the tourists have gone, we hear about the aftermath of Christ's birth. The short version is that King Herod was a nut job. That's an actual diagnosis. He was turned in upon himself. He couldn't bear the thought of another king born in his land under his watch. He was suspicious, he was fearful, he was paranoid and angry, and therefore murderous. The people of his land may have been waiting for a Messiah, but Herod never wanted the Messiah to come because he was in charge. He was on the throne. He had the pinnacle of power, and he intended to keep it and expected to pass on that power to his family. That's the way power works. Now, we talk a lot these days about empowerment, about helping others to gain strength and achieve their goals. That's a worthy aim. But do we really understand the nature of power? Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And as somebody notes, power means that you do not want to confront something that questions you. You cannot stand the threat. And therefore, you've become more and more encased in your own pride. That's one of the big moral lessons from the new Star Wars movie, The Rise of Skywalker. To everybody's surprise, actually to nobody's surprise, the nasty old emperor has been lurking in the shadows for years, ready to pursue his vain dream of galaxy domination. And he'll do anything to win it and keep it. Just like King Herod. Herod is intoxicated with power. He orders the destruction of the innocents, all because of one innocent child. And the sad truth is that nobody in his kingdom would have been surprised by this. They were well accustomed to his cruelty. They knew all about deprivation and poverty and senseless destruction. And there's no need to go into further detail about Herod, especially if the taste of candy canes lingers in our mouths. But did you see the other day? A 3-year-old boy in a yarmulke and his mother were attacked in Brooklyn by a crazed fanatic They were on their way walking to a Hanukkah celebration, and for no other reason. The assailant came out of nowhere and started hitting them, and it is but the latest in an increasing spree of such attacks in Brooklyn, where more Jews live than in Israel. So I'll tell you something and remind you of something. This is where Christ was born. It's the same world. It's the same place where people are threatened by people who are threatened. Some will strike their others down by using their power, and others will summon their power to hold their ground. Meanwhile, the sad truth is the world hasn't changed much since the time of Jesus. As a therapist once said to me, people who are hurt will hurt other people. And Jesus is born right in the middle of all this. Matthew's gospel tells the truth. From the very beginning of Jesus' life, there looms a cross. He is born with complete innocence, and that's what exposes those who are guilty. And in the display of moral weakness, King Herod tries to get rid of the future Messiah. And he does it in the most desolating way possible, threatening all the children of Bethlehem in order to get rid of the one. Well, as we know, God outsmarts King Herod, thanks to dreams and angels. This time, young Jesus is saved by his parents, yet the cross still awaits him even after Herod is out of the picture. Because an anxious empire will exchange one leader for another, but the anxiety continues if it is untreated. And that is the foreshadowing of the gift of the wise men, the myrrh. A most curious gift for a child. Gold for a king, yes. Incense, frankincense for a priest, absolutely. And myrrh is a burial spice. Let me give you a little advice. If you ever get invited to a baby shower, don't take any myrrh. The wise men brought myrrh. In the case of Jesus, this bitter perfume is a reminder that evil taints our world, that cruelty can still be in the air. And the myrrh foreshadows how Jesus will face the cross of a very anxious empire. Yet, the death of Jesus will also count for something. It will flip everything. For as in his life, the death of Jesus opens up an alternative to everything King Herod stands for. Instead of fear, Jesus always stepped out in courage. Instead of self-protection, Jesus offers himself repeatedly in self-giving. Instead of creating wreckage and grief, Jesus gives life and offers healing. Instead of anxiety expressed through destruction, Jesus dies to cancel human sin and its lingering effect, and that is the will of God. And then the greatest mystery of all, the myrrh that the wise men give to the infant Christ is never actually used. When Jesus dies, it is going to be on the eve of the Sabbath, so he's buried quickly. And when the women finally get there after the Sabbath to anoint him with the myrrh, he has already been raised from the dead. For there is a greater power at work in him than the power of death. It's the power of life, expressed in love, lived with simplicity and honesty for the benefit of all. Beginning with the children. So where was Jesus born? This is the world where he was born. And this is the world he died to save. And this is the world where God has raised him up to keep saving. The work goes on, and he remains with us, just as he said. For all life comes from God, and all life is a ceaseless invitation to live with God. Just as Jesus taught, all that he did, his teaching, his healing, his serving, his restoring, all of it is a model for how we can live. And we never have to be afraid. We can trust God over everything else because Jesus has come and he has come back and he will come again. And in the meantime, he stays with us just as he said. So if King Herod pokes up his head along our travels, the gospel has already exposed him for what he is, a tormented soul, less than fully human, wounded and anxious. And we know his way is not the way to the fullness of life. We can go home by another way. And should we ever get the chance, we can also look Herod squarely in the eye and declare what the poet said long ago. Love makes your soul crawl out from its hiding place. And love promises to heal us all.